This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kennison and Noel Lim. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Tuesday the 22nd of September. And guys, did you know that from now until the end of the year, there are precisely 100 days left to 2020? It's just all flown by.
We've entered less than three digits. Oh, just about three digits. Tomorrow onwards, there'll be a two-digit countdown till 2021.
Where did 2020 go?
I know. This is really the lost year, I honestly, because I think partly for us, it's also my sense of timing has been thrown off because we're in the office 1 week and working from home 1 week. So what I think is 2 weeks ago in the office is actually a month ago. And then like
yes,
one month
right.
ago, it's like 2 months ago. And it's just all gone so fast. Yeah. So, you know.
Another 100 days.
Just another 100 days to go. And perhaps we'll start to see the COVID-19 pandemic start to kind of come under control in more places around the world. We can still hold out hope, but we must of course remember to maintain all our physical distancing measures as well.
You know, it's another thing to keep under control in this COVID environment: the amount you eat when you're stuck at home. I don't know about you, but this is a problem that I definitely faced especially during the MCO, early stages of the MCO era. You know, it's so easy to reach for those snacks here and there. So I think in about 10 minutes we'll talk about some of these strategies to avoid overeating from our own inexperience or at least experience in the overeating segment of life.
And later on after the 6:30 news, what are we also going to be talking about, Noel?
Well, it's always going to be about the biggest headlines and it will be about the coronavirus.
All right. So if you want to weigh in on our conversations, remember you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we're looking at, we're also talking about food, but particularly about takeaway and how that's impacting our plastic usage. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was The Way by Fastball, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. And this morning we're looking at the subject of takeaway, because, you know, I think a lot of us, since movement control orders came into place and just generally on fears of going out too much and mixing with crowds, a lot of us have been ordering in food more. I certainly have been. And of course the downside to this is that you wind up with a lot of plastic and takeaway boxes and, you know, plastic cutlery. And there has been a report from WWF Malaysia saying that the tapau culture is now is a major contributor to the country's plastic waste problems. And this is quite unfortunate, right? Because I think by the end of last year, we were seeing quite a shift away from plastic on a relatively wide scale, particularly here in urban centres. And COVID-19 has just set it all back, it feels.
Yeah, I think this is one of those things where when you look at the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that situation, the physical needs are always going to come first, right? So when you're worried about your food and your own security and your own well-being, you're not concerned about the more self-actualized concerns like the environment or saving the world or preventing wildfires from burning down half of America. These are not the things that we think about. Or for setting blaze to trees in Indonesia that cause haze. These are not the things that we think about when we think we're in imminent danger. That said, though, it's definitely something that we need to think about. And tapau culture in general is not the best thing, right? Because unless you're one of the people who take your own Tupperware and own cups to go and buy this food, that food. And you do see that actually, despite, even though the initial stage of the MCO, a lot of people were a bit worried about how the virus spread, people are doing that again. And it's very good to see. But, you know, individuals doing it is one thing. It comes, I think, that there's a certain amount of responsibility that the corporations need to do as well, which is why I quite like this news that McDonald's was looking at reusable cups in a situation where when you buy your coffee, you pay a little bit of a deposit on the cup, and then when you return the cup, you get that deposit back. It's quite an interesting concept. I think it kind of lends itself to the sharing economy.
So I think a person can change their behavior, but you need a system to support that change in behavior. So for example, you know, people had to order in, right? Because it was, you know, might be a bit more complicated to go out and eat. But But you cannot help it if plastics is delivered to you. Food is delivered to you in plastic. It's not like you can send a disposable container over and then, you know, they put it in your container and it's brought to you. So, you know, the system has to support that. So I think it comes down to a waste management system, right? And I think we haven't even fully explored the potential of a really efficient and a useful waste management system yet in Malaysia. So that's one. And so two, back to the story about McDonald's using a reusable cup, and you are supposed to either return it using the Loop system, which is a system that they created where I think there will be in-store bins, special in-store bins that will be provided where you dump your cups there, and then presumably someone's going to wash those cups and
sterilize them.
Yeah, sterilize them and bring them back to McDonald's to be reused again. So, I think it might also require some change in behavior. First of all, people will have to queue up to leave their cups in the Loop system to get their deposit back, right? And I can see if the deposit's not a lot, most people are just going to skip that system.
Yeah, I think it'll be an interesting experiment done by McDonald's in the UK, right? So, because this is almost like the ride sharing or bike sharing systems that we see in other countries, except for reusable cups. And these cup bins will be in easily accessible areas, so your local Tesco, in addition to, of course, the McDonald's stores. They're trying to get over that initial level of inconvenience that comes with having to take your own tumbler to a shop to get coffee. So certain chains do that, right? Starbucks, for example, does that, where they give you a discount if you take your own cup to them to fill, for them to fill. But for a lot of people, that's also an inconvenience to have, you know, a relatively large cup in your bag all the time if you're planning to go for coffee. So in this case, you can still essentially buy the cup for a small deposit, but then, you know, when it comes to disposing it, you have that confidence and that assurance that you aren't just going to throw it into a landfill. You're sending it back into the system where it can be reused and its life cycle extended. I'll be very curious to see whether this can be implemented in other places. I'm not particularly confident of it being implemented here in Malaysia anytime soon, because in KL we haven't really had even a successful bike sharing system yet, and I think that's rather more pressing than reusable cups.
I think for a lot of places, it'll come down to the deposit, right? How much is that deposit going to cost you, and who you're catering this to, and I guess a general sense of culture. So these cups are made by Loop, and it's going to be, I mean, I generally believe in the whole bring your own cup to the situation, and Starbucks was actually one of the companies that taught me that. In fact, the tumbler that I bought from Starbucks back in the day paid itself off after some time. When you take a look at this situation, it is interesting. And if more companies do it and becomes more of that cultural norm, then we'll start to see that. And thing is, if it's Loop is the company that's running this situation, so it's not a McDonald's exclusive, right? Mm-hmm. It's not. So maybe if KFC picks it up, or the Dunkin' Donuts, or all these other companies pick it up, then you don't necessarily only use that cup at McDonald's. You use that cup wherever you go for coffee. And maybe you don't need that deposit back. You keep the cup for your next cup of coffee. You don't have to, you wash it yourself and you take it back to the next place you go. So it's just kind of just like a carry around cup system.
Yeah, so I take away from McDonald's. So I can imagine now I can see cups stacking up in my home. But maybe first of all, I think, you know, fast food chains, they should also address things like sugary drinks, right?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of interesting new deployments, I think, come probably the end of this year and beyond, as companies and people start looking beyond the immediate future of the COVID-19 pandemic. But do let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us over at BFM Radio. Tell us whether you think the sharing economy can reduce waste in this manner. We'll take a look at the results of social media in just a bit, but right now, some messages. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Still Sound by Toro y Moi, and you're listening to not the breakfast grill, not quite yet, that's in about an hour and a half. You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. And just now we were talking about takeaway eating habits that we've developed, particularly during this time of the pandemic. But the other thing that I think a lot of us find ourselves doing when we're, you know, at home for long periods, whether that's over the weekend because you don't want to go out too much, or whether it's because you're working from home on a longer basis, is, you know, you tend to reach for those high sugar, high calorie snacks in the middle of your day, when perhaps in the office you might not do so, because you're not in the habit. In an office environment, there are plenty of distractions and things to keep your brain busy, whereas for a lot of us, you know, the stress of the general atmosphere and the fact that we're living through a pandemic can sometimes, you know, be compounded by the isolation of working from home, and you find yourselves eating rather a little more than you should. So there is this article in the BBC Work Life. It's from a couple of months ago, talking about how to avoid overeating when working from home. And I think it's still pretty relevant, honestly, today, at least for me, if my last month has been any indication. What about you guys?
Oh, let's take a look at the last 6 months. I generally, before that, was actually doing quite well in terms of the eating habits and the keeping off sugar and all of that jazz. And then my birthday came around in February, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, I'm thinking on a vacation. I'm going to take a break from the eating healthy. And then there was a bit of a political kerfuffle, which elevated stress levels at the time, especially even in the media scene. And then the COVID-19 pandemic just took full steam ahead. And the next thing you know, 6 months later, and I consumed more sugar than I did, I think, last year. We're talking about tubs of ice cream, cookies, chocolate, everything that I could reach for. And you're talking about, Lynn, the office environment. It's, I think, beyond that. It's the fact that you have access, easy access to your personal pantry, which you can stock with whatever you want. And when you're in a situation where, you know, you're not sure when's the next time you're going to go to the grocery store, especially at the beginning, you buy whatever you want. Or as much as you can afford of certain things. I mean, I ate a lot of Maggie Mee. Maggie Mee is one of those comfort foods for me. I just make like one packet, put in 3 eggs in there and whatever meat's in the fridge, and I'm good to go. And it really is that comfort factor in and amongst all the volatility we're seeing. We just want to find some safety and some comfort. And a lot of times that's in front at home and with some food. For me, at least.
I find myself eating all the time, whether at home or in the office. And so it doesn't change, yeah? In the office, if there's food, I eat. At home, there's food, I eat. So I think that key word is access, right? As long as you put food anywhere, I'm eating it. So I always say, you know, it's quite easy to poison me. So anyway, I think the point here is, you know, we eat, well, if we are hungry. And we also eat to distract ourselves. Mm. We eat our boredom as well. And maybe for some form of gratification, like we're trying to fill a gap.
Fill a void in our lives.
Yeah,
Noel.
Yeah. So I think that's what I'm doing. I'm just eating all the time, right? Yeah. So then I realized one thing. Okay, if you stop buying the food, there's nothing in the fridge, right? So when my sister opens the fridge and said, where's the food? There's just a fridge here. No food. And then the other thing is maybe to just buy something healthy. So I usually gravitate towards fruits.
Yeah. So I found myself, you know, stress eating quite a lot, and it was really bad. Like, you know, you're talking about packets of Maggie Mee. I'm talking about packets of M&Ms, like large packets of M&Ms that I could consume in one sitting. And it was partly because, particularly for these last 6 months, yes, there's been pandemic, yeah, but there have also been family stresses and, you know, health issues from people close to me. So you feel, when you get home and you feel down, the easiest way to kind of pick yourself up a lot of times is a sugar rush. It's not healthy and it's not good for you in the long term. But when you're in that kind of not great mental place, you're just going to reach for the short-term solution. And so this article looks at some of the ways to work around that, because it is, at the end of the day, down to how you manage your mental health and how you manage stress levels and kind of dips in spikes of anxiety. It could be having a designated friend or two who to call when you're feeling like, oh, okay, you know, I need to pick me up. So you can be my replacement of sugar. Can you just like call
somehow?
Call
I don't
me.
Think I can replace M&Ms.
You know, it's
well,
not
you never know. Don't sell yourself short, Noelle.
Not that sweet.
So actually, I cut out sugar around 3 weeks ago, and I can tell you the first week was terrible. It really is it's withdrawal. That's what it is. My body, I think day two or three was fine. Day four, which was conveniently a Friday.
conveniently,
yeah,
right?
So that I could stay at home and not do anything. I didn't want to do anything. I really felt like the world was ending around me and that nothing in life gave me joy anymore, because that's how much I was craving sugar at that point. And luckily, I had some sugar-free ice cream in the fridge. Not mine, but I ate
cares,
it anyway,
right?
Because at that point, I got to do something about this. And I started drinking a lot of soda water, because that fizziness and the coldness sort of offsets that sugar craving. 2 weeks later, you kind of normalized a little bit, and I started coming back to a situation where if I ate too much sugar, I actually got a little sick. I got jelak. Whereas during that 6 months, I had increased my jelak tolerance to a significant amount, where a bar of chocolate was nothing. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, okay, you got a few strips of that chocolate bar, and you're like, okay, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to fall sick in a little bit if I keep eating this.
Yeah, so it's all about managing your triggers, right? So mine particularly is that period. My danger period is always, you know, that bit at the checkout counter when you're at the grocery store, because the chocolates are all there, and you know, it's grocery store planning, right? Why they place them there. It's the last impulse purchase.
Also, it's lower so that the kids can see it.
Absolutely. Well, I'm not a kid and I still see it.
But you've grown up looking at that. So you've been
just adjusted your eye level, that's all.
Yeah. So I try to replace it. I replace it with something. So right now I'm replacing it with caffeine. Eventually I'll probably replace it with something like tea to try and manage that expectation. But do let us know. What do you think? Have your snacking habits changed during this, when you're working from home? Do let us know. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We have the 6:30 news bulletin coming up. But first, Raspberry Beret by Prince. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisan and Noel Lim. That was Silver Lining by Rilo Kiley, something that we're all constantly looking for in this age where the majority of our news tends to be dominated by COVID-19. Because there hasn't been some very great news, particularly out of the UK, when it comes to the coronavirus pandemic. Their alert level is being upgraded from 3 to 4, meaning that transmission is, and I quote, high or rising exponentially. So this is according to the UK's chief medical officers. And this is after the government's scientific advisor warned that there could be as many as 50,000 new coronavirus cases a day by mid-October if things continue in the UK as they are.
Looking at the numbers on Monday, a further 4,400 daily cases were reported in the UK, up from about 3,899 cases. So the Prime Minister Boris Johnson will make a statement in the Commons today, actually, later, about, I guess, 7 hours' time. So the thing is, I think the BBC political editor, I think she's saying that it is very likely that pubs and other venues in England will be forced to have that 10 p.m. mm-hmm. closing times alongside other measures. And I think what we've learned from this COVID-19 situation, this management of it, right, preemptive action really helps, because that will curb the growth in cases, and you want to control that, right? Otherwise your hospital system, the NHS in England, in the UK, will be overburdened.
That's, I think, this is very nostalgic, right? It feels like we're going back 6 months ago to the flatten the curve point that we're trying to make. And I think that's what we've done a really good job of here in Malaysia. And that's always going to be the concern. The concern is not that you, obviously, number of cases is a concern. But more importantly is that it doesn't go to a number that your country or your healthcare system can't handle. Because mm-hmm. we really, really shouldn't put healthcare workers through what they went through again 5 months ago. That's not something we should put anyone through again. And that's why it's so important to flatten the curve and make it difficult for transmission, to make it to bring the ratio and the spread down. And that's what's not happening in the UK right now. And that's why, I mean, cases were at 4,000. Based on the current trajectory and the numbers that they're calculating, it could be 50,000 mid-October if nothing is done. Hence why the concern over this. I think this comes back to the, you know, every time people bring up the mortality rates of COVID-19 and then they compare it to other things that have happened in the world, like, yes, on a mortality basis, it's maybe not the most lethal thing, but it's incredibly disruptive, especially if you don't manage the situation. And then you come to a point where it's so contagious that even though maybe young people are less likely to really feel the effects of it, we have a significant aged population that could see severe disruption to their lives and more importantly, the disruption to the healthcare system.
And there are also, you know, long-term effects that are still being discovered from if you experienced a COVID-19 infection, right? So in the US particularly, you're starting to hear stories of people who've come out of a positive reading of COVID-19. On the other side, you know, they appear to have long-term breathing difficulties, or they have suddenly developed cardiac problems. And these are people in their 20s and 30s who otherwise ordinarily would not have, you know, cardiac problems on such a large scale. So the COVID-19, I think, has been dangerous in the sense that we keep underestimating it. You know, we underestimated we underestimated its infection rates at the very start of this. We underestimated its long-term effects, and we underestimated its ability to really turn our global economy upside down, because we have had to. Countries around the world are now afraid to go back into a full lockdown because you don't want to risk the economic crisis that came with it. You don't want, particularly if you're a poorer country, you don't want to risk people's livelihoods and therefore their lives when they live hand to mouth. But what can you do at the same time, right? If you allow your country to come out too quickly from quarantine measures, and your people start to experience crisis fatigue, you do run the very real risk that you are going to have another public health emergency.
And this is where we take a look at the way that Malaysia has handled the situation. And it is very commendable. And I mean, when you look at the rest of the world, it's easy to really appreciate the measures that we've taken to manage it. And I'm not saying that it's across the board that people haven't suffered. People have. I mean, it's proportionally affected different groups. Some people have suffered more for sure. But today we're managing clusters a lot better. We have some surplus in the healthcare system at this point. We are seeing a bit of some concern in Sabah right now, but we're talking about a total of 57 new cases recorded. 57 as opposed to 4,000 recorded in the UK. So, we shouldn't be complacent. I think that's the messaging we're trying to emphasize here. But there's a lot of silver linings when you take a look at the Malaysian situation.
Let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be taking a look at the front pages of our local papers and portals next. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was You Turn Me On, I'm a Radio by Joni Mitchell, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. Now, we've had some social media responses thus far to what we've discussed this morning. Over on Twitter, Carl Chin and Kyril Fazli have both responded to a question of, can the sharing economy reduce waste? Carl says, Tapao and online shopping are creating a new wave of plastic garbage. Can't dispute that. Kyril Fazli says, so come up with products that are environmentally friendly. And I think we have seen some murmurs of companies also looking at returning to their kind of sustainability principles and looking at environmentally friendly options. So that's a good thing, because perhaps they've been given a bit of a reprieve from COVID-19 concerns. Debonair, which is a nice name, has responded to the question of whether their snacking habits has changed. And this person says, no, not me. I have a regime, 8-hour intervals between food intakes. So that's kept me on the straight and narrow. Very
I want to try that for sure.
I like this guy. I really do. I think this is a fantastic strategy. I believe in constraints, right? So I do the whole intermittent fasting thing. So that really helps with the managing my own intake of food, because it's when you get into these routines and I find it easier to tell myself, these are the things that you can do. Like keep the sandbox small, and then you are more like less likely to venture outside the sandbox. Just make sure you got enough in there to keep you entertained.
Yeah, I think it's to do what is the simplest, right? The lowest hanging fruit, so to speak.
Remove as opposed to complexity, right? Simplicity to your system as opposed to making it over complex and then putting more stress on your brain and more likely for you to reach for that bag of M&Ms.
Absolutely. Rebel, of course, has also weighed in on the opposite end, says, snacking habits have changed slightly, eating time is irregular. And I identify with this quite well. But also looking at our papers this morning, what do we have on the front page of the NST, Noel?
Yes, so Sabah surge with COVID-19 cases now already detected in KK, Kota Kinabalu, and the emergence of yet another cluster. Sabah has gone into a heightened state of alert as early voting is held today, the state elections. So the National Security Council will be meeting to discuss this increasingly serious situation. Hopefully the state elections will still go through with the most minimal hiccup, but I guess the government needs to take precaution. And also, you know, after the elections, what will happen, right? All these politicians and observers who have gone and the voters who have gone to Sabah, when they come back, they are not subject to quarantine. So that's also something I guess we have to be mindful of, that we don't have imported cases from East Malaysia.
I've got the Malaysian Reserve in front of me, and actually following up on the Sabah note here, they spoke to a lecturer at University of Malaysia Sabah, Dr. Sharuddin Awang Ahmad, who basically said that Musa Aman still has influence over Sabah voters in the campaigning situation. Now, he's not being fielded by anyone at this point. He's not being fielded by anyone at all. But he says that his speeches could really fire up the voter base. And this is something that's very important, right? Engagement of the voter base. Because political fatigue and voter fatigue is a very real thing. And oftentimes, it's about getting your base and your supporters to turn up, being one of the most important things when it comes to any election.
Absolutely. And we're actually taking a look at the Sabah political landscape later on during the Breakfast Grill today. So I'll be speaking with Dr. Arnold Puyok, who's a political analyst at University of Malaysia Sarawak, as well as Dr. Johan Arifin, former deputy director of the Sabah Foundation. So that's going to be a very interesting conversation. Do tune in later on after the 8 o'clock news. And I also have the Star in front of me, and their headline here is a little bit different. So they've got triple scare, and it's a picture of a construction site with a very tall, what looks to be elevated highway. I think this is the Suk, S-U-K-E. I don't really know how you pronounce that, because this is, there were apparently 3 near misses over 2 days involving construction equipment and at a project site. And I think a lot of us have seen the very scary videos circulating on social media of a woman's car, I think, that was crushed by a falling piece of concrete, I think it was. And she very luckily escaped with only injuries to her left arm, because it hit her passenger seat. But it's really like something out of Final Destination. It was so terrifying.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Well, thank goodness she survived it. Mm-hmm. So I think NST has gone to the ground to talk to some workers there. So some supervisors, of course, they cite anonymity. They are saying there's a lack of trained supervisors, cutting costs on safety nets, using reconditioned cranes. Some of these things might have caused this accident to happen.
Yeah, so there were apparently 2 other accidents as well, involving construction equipment. So they were technically traffic accidents, but I think cranes bumped into the back of cars and wound up crushing the back seat and things like that. So it's very much in the spotlight right now. And we're also going to be talking about this at about 7:15 with Tan Sri Lee Lam Thai, who's chairman of the Alliance of Safety Communities. So be sure to stay tuned for that.
And just something I just want to point out. This is on page 7 of the Malaysian Reserve. The prosecution in the former Malaysian External Intelligence Organization, DG Dr. Hasanah Abdul Hamid's criminal breach of trust case, is applying for the proceeding to be heard in camera for 15 witnesses, as it involves national security issues. And she was, of course, alleged of misappropriating 50 million ringgit from the Malaysian government. This was some real spy stuff back in the day.
Very dramatic indeed. So we're going to be watching for updates on all of these stories, bringing them to you as we get them ourselves. But right now we are about to head into the 7 o'clock bulletin and then more business news and analysis. But first, here is Faithless with Muhammad Ali, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.